Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 166. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Just finishing up some salad here. Getting ready. Got my workouts planned this afternoon. I'm going to ride 10 miles. We got to get ready for VMworld in Vegas, man.
Salad. So do you just have like regular salad, like kale? Do you pour it with honey? What do you put on your, what dressing?
Oh, okay. So I like a balsamic. It's nice and light, some turkey. But the key thing to getting ready to VMworld is before you go eat all those rich foods while you're away from home, you got to just salad out. No meat, just salad. I did some peppers today, some white peppers from, you know, farmer's market. I got to get in shape and ready to get on that plane and go to VMworld.
Yeah. Now, that is something that you used to talk about, like, before we go to Barcelona, and you knew you were going to have that jamon intake that you'd start to, you know, a couple of weeks before you'd eat a lot of healthy food. But this year, we're not going to Barcelona. We're not going to Vegas. So, yeah, it's going to be a remote VMworld, which is going to be pretty interesting.
Okay, on that note, I'm going to go find some roast beef.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, John. So it's VMworld's coming up very soon. So I figured, hey, let's do another VMworld preview. We've done these in the past. We've always welcomed Ken Werneberg and Duncan Epping. And heck, let's bring them back. These guys, they're no strangers to VMworld. And I think they've got some good information to share with us. So Duncan, welcome back.
Hey, guys.
And Ken Werneberg, welcome back.
Thank you, man. Not only am I no stranger to VMworld, but I'm also no stranger to love.
Well, you're not going to get any love on this podcast, my friend. Hey, how many VMworlds will this make for you guys?
I have literally no idea. It's probably, I don't know, 20 something.
Yeah.
I usually attend both US and in Europe, so it's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't recall. I remember the first one was the one with Smash Mouth. Was that San Diego or San Francisco? I don't remember. Like, wow. 2003 or something like that.
12, I think.
And this year is going to be virtual, so that I think that's going to be an interesting spin, and I want to talk about that for sure. And I also want to talk about some of the other virtual events that have been out there because strange times we're in, right? So I'm really curious to see how an event that normally packs 19 to 23,000 people, what that looks like when we're talking about a virtual event. So, Ken, why don't you give us some of the skinny? I know you've been working internally at VMware with some of the VMworld folks. And so what's different this year? What can we expect?
Well, they are delivering the event online, so... Of course, shifting things to more of a virtual platform is going to cause a lot of change, and I'm not sure we actually know how this is going to go. I think it's kind of a cool experimental kind of a VMworld this time around, which I'm glad that we're doing this in a little later in the year, so other people have switched over kinds of events already, so there's a bit of a track record there. But yeah, so a lot of the sessions now are going to be done on demand. So what traditionally would have been the breakout where you go, you know, stand in line because you forgot to register early enough, and then you want to go see Pete Fletcher, John Nicholson, or Duncan Epping, and you stand outside and you chat with people. Not going to happen. It's all on demand. You just select that pre-recorded session that has been done by the speakers, and watch that at your leisure at any given point in time. And I think that's the vast majority of the sessions. There are also going to be some scheduled sessions, which are things like the birds of a feather roundtable sorts of sessions, talking about individual topics or something that anybody might be looking at, but also the sort of executive direction, a lot of the keynotes and solution overviews and things like that are going to be scheduled. So to get the sort of experience that you were accustomed to, getting those large announcements, getting the vision, direction, strategy types of sessions, that's all going to be scheduled, and it's almost like a TV type of an experience. So you watch the track and then find out what's happening, and I don't care about this one, I'm going to change channels and watch a different track and things like that. So kind of a neat interplay.
So the breakout sessions, they're pre-recorded, but they're not released at a certain time. Like, for example, I assumed initially when they announced that there might be, you know, if Duncan was presenting a session, that even though it was pre-recorded, that he would be sort of on the line to answer any questions, like maybe in the chat. Well, is that not a thing?
It's both, actually. Yeah. So the vast majority, let's call it 500 and change breakout sessions, are pre-recorded and just consumed on demand. That's it. But then the first 2 days, there are definitely pre-recorded sessions, but they're simulive. So let's say there are about 20, 25, 30 sessions that you might be interested in catching live, where you can sit down, watch that, and then, you know, ask the GM of the business unit a question in the online chat, sort of a thing. So a little bit of both, but definitely a smaller set of sessions that are going to be done in that simulive format. And that's just in the first 2 days. The vast majority of the rest of the breakouts are just on demand.
And even though the simulive sounds interesting, Pete, I've done a number of virtual events. And the challenge, of course, typically is, especially with something like VMworld, is scheduling those simulives around various time zones.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I mean, it's easy for the U.S. as 80% of the speakers are probably from the U.S. or maybe 70%, whatever it ends up being. But, you know, in this particular case, we'll have people, you know, tuning in from India, South Africa, you know, all of the different countries worldwide. So we need to take that into consideration as well. So I guess one of the reasons they decided to limit it to a, you know, particular set of sessions to do these similar lives is just because of the scheduling aspect. It just becomes impossible to, you know, cover all the time zones and have, you know, people staying away for 24 hours just to answer a question that comes in from a random island in the middle of the ocean somewhere.
Yeah. Easy.
Like Canada. With an island.
I did a session. I can't remember what the event was for, but I did a pre-recorded session and for another, I think it was for a partner or whatever. And they asked, they were like, will you be available for questions during the session? It was like a simulive. And I was like, yeah, sure. But they had like three time zones. They wanted me to do it. And one of them was like in Japan at like 2 a.m. my time. I was like, I think I'm going to miss that one.
Well, we're doing the same sort of thing here, actually. So if you look at the agenda when everything's kind of fully released there and we know when all of these sessions are scheduled and so forth in the next couple of weeks here, you'll see that, yeah, we've got, let's call it the executive sessions, the general sessions, and they're going to be run three times, three different time zones. Likewise for the solution keynotes, the spotlights, things along those lines, the few breakouts that we are doing in a simulive fashion. We are running them in the three different time zones to make sure that it's appropriate. Now, the weird thing there is, of course, hey, so I got my session. This is going to be great. So I'm going to sit through the simulive starting at 9 a.m. in the Americas and running to 11 p.m. in EMEA, you know, things like that. So we obviously can't do that. So if you look at some of the roundtables, for example, we may be having different speakers hosting the simulive sessions in the different regions. So Pete, you might record something talking about, I don't know, the LCM or something like that for a roundtable. You might run that Q&A yourself for the Americas and then have a volunteer who knows the subject matter run APJ. And if you're running through some insomnia, you might get up and run it for EMEA yourself again, things like that. So we have different speakers supporting the different sessions in the different time zones.
Well, I mean, that's one of the strengths though of having a 30,000 person company is, while I love to talk about vSAN, you know, during the day, and I'll talk about it at night, if something's going into, you know, 3 a.m. my time, Cedric is, you know, very competent, can cover these things over there. So
I've had 3 a.m. conversations with you about vSAN. I don't know who you're kidding.
Yeah, let's be honest, I don't sleep. So
Ken, you mentioned a couple of different types of sessions. I know the breakouts are one big part, and there's been some discussion around that, right? Is VMworld completely free? What does that look like? I know there's different ways to attend.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's free for me. So yeah.
Is that all that matters?
Yeah, really? You're welcome. Yeah, it is free. All of the breakouts, everything that you could get on demand, all of the general sessions, the solutions keynotes, all of those things, free for any registered attendees. There is some content that is going to be reserved for the Premier Pass people. That does have a cost associated with it. But that sort of material are these roundtable sessions where, you know, up to 25 people can sit down in a room, sort of similar to what we did with the group discussions in the past or the meet the experts. It's kind of a combination of those things, but it's basically a live Zoom session. So I don't know, John might be doing something on vSAN in a roundtable setting. So that would be gated to the paid contents. Likewise, they're doing instructor-led hands-on labs. So you're, of course, able to sit down and take any of the hands-on labs anytime you want. But if you want that instructor-led perspective where you got somebody running you through it online, then that's also gated content as well.
It always blows my mind how many people attend the hands-on labs at VMworld. I mean, it's, you know, there, a lot of folks come to do that. So I'm sure that's going to be interesting to see how they handle that remotely.
Well, the strength there is you've always got the newest stuff. So there's stuff that'll come out there that's kind of like in a beta format that you might not even see posted to the main site for, you know, another month or two. You've also got the experts to help you. So you've got not only the instructor-led options, but you've also just got the lab captains, like some of the guys who actually build the labs, you know, helping out is what drives a lot of that.
Yeah, I've done it in the past. I used to be a lab captain. I've been a lab captain for probably every single product that we have, you know, right now. Well, except for NSX, but I've done, you know, vSphere, Site Recovery Manager, what have you, all of those different things. And it's just insane the amount of people that go through these labs, but it's also, you know, really cool to see what people are doing during those labs, not just running through those, you know, scripted labs, but they're also just testing things out, figuring out how it works and, you know, doing some command line stuff on top of that. And they have so many random questions, which, you know, not only for the people attending it, it's very valuable, but also for us as experts, it's very valuable to see what people are doing,
And
what kind of questions that they have, because it allows you to start writing new material again or produce video content or whatever it is. So, you know, those are always very cool. Although I would never ever recommend anyone within VMware to become a part of the lab staff, because it's an insane amount of work. I think every single person who's done it probably underestimated the first time how much work it is.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous the amount of hours that these guys put in. We're talking about, you know, 12 to 15 hour shifts every single day. If you're in the US, you know, 6 days for a full week. It's crazy. I have a lot of respect for some of these guys, because I know some of the guys on those teams, they've been doing it for, you know, 10, 15 years, every single year, again and again and again. Man, it's impossible.
Yeah, it's amazing how seamless they make it look. Like, it just seems like everything works. You sit down at your browser, you type in, I want to run this lab, and boom, you're interfacing with that thing. And it's absolutely, to your point, Duncan, amazing how much work goes into that behind the scenes. So yeah, hats off to them. But the other cool thing about those labs is that a lot of the stuff that we've been doing in the last few years here is not just pure software in isolation, right? If we start talking about NSX, we talk about vSAN, things like this, we've got a hardware component that not everyone has access to.
Yeah, yeah.
So to be able to run these things, even if it's just, again, something like a Simulive, of like an iSIM or the full experience when you're really using the product set, it's something that people don't always get access to at home. So I think if you look at the top three labs, usually the number one is if we have a new vSphere launch or something like that, obviously that's the number one, what's new with vSphere. Number two, number three, it's always, you know, vSAN or NSX. And I swear it's so that people have that access to an environment that they, you know, even if you've got a lab in your office or something along those lines, having to rebuild it around evaluating a particular piece of technology at that intersection between hardware and software, not easy.
Yeah.
Pop open a browser and use it within 5 minutes of logging in. That's pretty cool.
I like it. So what about the community aspect? I know it's going to be different this year. Obviously, there's not going to be a band or a big, you know, hall crawl or any of that. But I wonder what's going to happen. Have you guys had any discussions with folks about, is there any attempt at some form of hall crawl or at least some sort of gathering with folks? I don't even know how that would happen.
Yeah, I think that's going to be challenging, to be honest. I mean, first of all, in terms of music, right, you can play any kind of music you want at home. So that's the great thing. Yeah. You don't need to wait for the VMworld band to be announced and be disappointed that it's not Metallica or Pearl Jam or the Foo Fighters, right?
I've got a 75-inch TV and I'm just going to be blasting 4K concerts. And
exactly.
It.
I just downloaded one of the old Nirvana sets. So I'll be playing, I will be watching Nirvana play nice. Live during VMworld. But I mean, it's in terms of community, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be different this year. But I suspect what we'll see happening is that a lot of the engagements and a lot of the interactions will start happening on Twitter.
Yeah.
And LinkedIn probably, because that's also a you know, social media platform that's being used by a lot of people doing something in the VMware space. If you see the traction that some of my posts on LinkedIn have been getting, it's actually more than Twitter at times, which is surprising. So I suspect that a lot of those, you know, discussions will be held online. And, you know, to be honest, you know, in some shape or form, it's a shame that it's not happening in, you know, in a physical way that we've done it before.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about this is that everyone gets to experience it at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Right. Which is unique worldwide, whether you can afford to fly out to VMworld or not, right? That person sitting in South Africa, who, you know, would be a, you know, really expensive flight from South Africa to Las Vegas or San Francisco, now gets to enjoy all of the content, you know, straight from his desk at home or in the office, whatever he or she may end up being. So I think that is something that is amazing. And at the same time, if they have a question while they are watching John and Pete talk about vSAN file services, they can ask you the question on Twitter, because I'm pretty sure that you guys will respond within 10, 15 minutes if you're online, right? So I think that is an added benefit.
Yeah, I totally agree. The online presence around VMworld, like whether we have a hall crawl online or not, I mean, to me, it's going to be dwarfed by the amount of interaction that we're going to see on Twitter, right? Because everyone's so accustomed to that really awkward moment where you have to line up after the session and wait to ask your question and all the rest of these things. There's no barrier like that anymore. Like I'm watching something, I don't really understand what it is. Boom, I can hit Duncan up on Twitter and ask him what he was talking about in this thing. And, you know, you get that sort of real-time interaction there too.
So I need to go change my first slide to include my Twitter handle, which I think I generally have it there, but make sure it's there. So
yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely something that you should put in there. What I typically end up doing is at my Twitter handle at the start, make sure to mention your website somewhere. Mm-hmm. Add Storage Hub in that as well, so people know where to go to, or you know, whichever location you would prefer them to go to read up on some of the documentation. I think that's very valuable. One other thing to mention is I've been doing a lot of these virtual events over the past 3 months. Cormac, Frank, and I have been doing this virtual VMUG tour all throughout the world. So we've been doing you know, sessions basically for every single country in Europe. So we've been doing dedicated sessions for all of the smaller VMUGs. And the one thing that stood out to me, it's not something that I expected, because I saw a lot of people complaining about all of these Zoom sessions and how, you know, it's boring, it's not interactive, and they're not getting the responses they would be, you know, expecting to get. But the one thing that I have noticed, or at least that we have noticed, is that, first of all, the attendance was pretty good for all of the sessions that we've done. Okay, they may have something to do with, you know, Cormac, Frank, and Duncan showing up, but
yeah,
these guys, the VMUG leaders, were telling me that they were seeing that at other events as well, virtual events. But the great thing that the VMUG leaders told us, and that's something that we've noticed as well, is that when you run these types of events virtually, right, there is no, you know, benefit into just randomly showing up. In terms of benefit, I mean, there's no real incentive like free food or what have you. The only incentive that you have is knowledge, experience, being with the community. So one of the things that we've noticed is that we were getting a lot more questions when we were doing it online, when we were running them through Zoom. So we would have, you know, the chat window open. We would have the Q&A window open. So if Pete asks a question about vSAN file services, while I'm going through the slide deck, I actually pause my presentation to say, you know, it's a great question that comes in from Pete, if it fits in the content, right?
Yeah.
And I would answer the question while we actually go through the deck itself.
That's good.
And
I like that.
It adds a, you know, a significant amount of interaction. It's not really possible, you know, at the scale of VMworld, because we will potentially have, you know, 50,000 people consuming the same content.
Yeah.
You know, if you then need to pay attention to a Q&A window, you're going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But at a smaller scale, I think that just, you know, works amazingly well. I was very surprised about the interaction with, you know, all of the VMUG people, to be honest, with the community in general.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of enthusiasm at some other events. I won't name the name of the event, but I actually presented a lifecycle management using vSphere Lifecycle Manager for HCI at another event. And boy, talk about early on lessons learned from previous trade shows. They somehow, even though they had it gated for registration, there were Zoom sessions. I was presenting, and the minute I stopped sharing my screen, I saw that you could see my camera, and then right next to me was not something that I would say on this podcast. It was definitely something that I did not want to see. And I was like, yeah, while I appreciate the enthusiasm, it's not the level of enthusiasm that I had anticipated for my session.
And this is why the interactive sessions are all gated and pay only at all the conferences now as we go into the back half of the year. Is, you know, there's a limit to how many simultaneous video feeds you want, and you probably want the credit card numbers of everyone who is using the video.
If you see something like that in a simulized session, it's by design.
I mean, the funny thing is with Zoom, we made the mistake with the first virtual VMUG that we did to set up a regular Zoom session, but you can set it up as a webinar as well, which allows you to block the video of all of the people dialing in, while you can have the video of all of the panelists and the people presenting turn on, right? So Zoom actually has a lot of those capabilities built in. It's just that a lot of people don't understand where to enable it or where to disable it.
Yeah.
Well, one thing to note on that webinar mode is the video quality can actually be higher. So you can request 1080p in webinar mode, not regular video mode.
Hmm.
Exactly.
I really like this shift, just, you know, getting away from VMworld for a second, but just in general terms, I really do like that. I mean, my personal style when I'm presenting is that I want to stop and take every question as we go. And then that never works in a live presentation. You always end up just dovetailing off into something irrelevant or rabbit holing into something or whatever it happens to be. But with this sort of a model where it's pre-recorded online, but you're doing that live interaction. I really like that because you can take the time and just chat through those questions. So if someone doesn't want to wait till the end and they got to run, they got to do something else, they can ask a question. You can get right into it right off the bat. So I do like this.
And the great thing is with Zoom as well, as I mentioned, if someone asks a question, the name actually pops up. So you can actually, you know, mention their name, which makes it really, really personal. So you say, oh yeah, that's a great question, John. Let me, you know, dive into a bit more detail on this particular topic. And the other thing that I've noticed as well, because it's online and people don't necessarily need to ask the question, especially if they're not non-native speakers, you know, using their voice, it just makes it a bit easier for them. We've done sessions all throughout the world. So I've done India recently. We've done, you know, the UK, Germany, we're doing France. There's, I don't know how many countries we've done, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, you name it.
Yeah.
And it just works amazingly well online because people don't hesitate to ask that question. And what we've even done in some cases is that we had native speaking people locally. When we've done Brazil, for instance, we made sure that there was a person online that actually, you know, spoke English really well and could translate. Any That's questions smart. That came in Portuguese or Spanish for the people dialing in from another country, right? So that helped as well. They would just simply translate the question and he would be able to answer that, you know, going through the deck. And in our case, what we simply did is we organized sessions that were only 30 minutes long, but we added an additional 10 minutes just for Q&A. Yeah. And every single time we needed those 10 minutes after the session to actually answer all of the outstanding questions as well. So the interaction is actually pretty, pretty good.
You also just reminded me of the booth. I mean, there is going to be a virtual booth with demos that are running. And one of my biggest pains in the ass with VMworld is always standing at the booth with all of the noise, with some jackass with his megaphone, like bellowing away about the raffle for some friggin' thing that nobody cares about. That, you know, it's just more crap that you got to ship home. And that noise is just filling the whole thing. I'm not passionate about it, but I'm just saying, I hate it. And then somebody comes up and maybe English isn't their first language and a little hesitant, they're a little quieter and you can't hear a thing they're asking. And I always feel like such a jerk going, what? Sorry, could you repeat that again? One more time? Like, oh no, wrong booth. You got to go over there. I mean, having this all done online through text with the real demos and real people answering the questions, but having that virtual interaction, I think is actually going to be good from a booth perspective where we can really answer people's questions without worrying about, you know what, just catch me later outside the show so we can actually talk about this topic. So chance for a little more exploration of the topics, I think.
We actually had that recently as well. When we had the VMware internal R&D conference radio, they had these, they had the expo. And the cool thing about the expo was, you know, even though it was virtual, in that particular case, we could actually jump on a Zoom call with the people that were presenting a particular poster or a particular piece of technology. So, you know, there was one on Datrium, for instance. So I jumped on the call and we had, you know, three of the engineers sitting there just answering the random questions. So that was really, really cool and very useful as well, because like Ken said, you know, it's not noisy. It sits you in there. You can ask the question, you will get an answer, and then you can go to the next one. So that that worked surprisingly well.
You're not going to miss someone asking you to scan your badge every 5 seconds?
Nope.
Maybe just set that up at home with some sort of point of sale thing just to get that noise. Just so I get back to my comfort zone.
Pete actually has a like some B-roll audio footage of the background of a convention center that we can pipe in to make it sound. In fact, he's probably playing it right now while I'm talking. I know he's going to edit that in. So.
Oh, you know me.
Sorry,
so well.
What was that, John?
John, can you speak up?
Free bouncy balls! Free bouncy balls! Over here, right now! Free
you
bouncy
son
balls!
Of a bitch.
It's an interesting one, though, right? I do wonder what some of the vendors that would normally be, you know, handing out all of this swag are going to do. Is anyone going to ship stuff around the world, or, you know, are they planning other things? That is something that I find intriguing, because so far all of the events that I've done, there was no swag whatsoever, and there was nothing distributed, which I think is a good thing. There's no need to ship around, you know, t-shirts, stickers, and what have you. People have enough shit in their homes to begin with, right? So it's interesting to see what other vendors are going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I think the whole point around swag stuff we all get, let's just call it that. I think that I don't like it either. I think it's a waste of the environment. I think it's a waste of money. I think that it just ends up cluttering people and then it ends up cluttering landfills. So I welcome the day that we end up with less swag just in general and higher quality items. So if we can end up again shifting to virtual where, you know, if you are really interacting with somebody, then I will ship you a t-shirt that says Virtually Speaking Podcast or whatever it happens to be on it.
Boom.
Rather than just, oh yeah, here's your USB stick for 2 megs that, you know,
Well, we had a mandate for sustainability to where you couldn't just hand out disposable stuff anymore at VMworld. Like I know that started with, at least at Barcelona last year, there were some real restrictions on what you could give for the handouts. Like there are no paper handouts. I mean, it's, you know, kind of reminds me of the getting rid of booth babes back in the day. There's some movements. I mean, the convention process has moved slower than they probably should on cleaning up a lot of the negative actions.
I mean, they cut out the paperwork, but there's still a massive amount of plastic just floating around, right? So especially at those conventions, there's probably more plastic than the paperwork to begin with. But I think I agree with Ken. It will be interesting to see what they will be doing. And I think it would be good as well to have people signing up. And I have an interesting story on that topic, by the way. I think it was like 3 years ago. I had to drive... I was throwing out some stuff from my backyard. So I was driving to one of the dump places in the city I live in. And the guy actually working at one of those dump places was wearing a t-shirt that was distributed at VMworld, which is very funny because I'm pretty sure that guy didn't attend VMworld. I know the guy because he's family of my wife. So it was very interesting to see him wearing that t-shirt, which was obviously something that someone took home and didn't need and probably threw out. So it was, I was very surprised about that.
That is funny. Sweet. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, why don't we finish off with sessions? Thoughts, guys? Anything you're looking forward to doing? I know John and are doing a file services deep dive. I'm also doing a session on vSphere Lifecycle Manager for HCI. So what about you guys? Anything you guys are looking forward to?
Definitely. Really looking forward to day drinking. And, you know, usually Duncan and I have this, comfortable shoes, drink lots of water, you know, don't overdo it on day one. No, man, I'm going to start hard. And I'm going to carry on the entire time. I may not wear pants the entire event. I don't
know.
Like it's going to be pretty exciting being able to just be myself at home. seriously. Not seriously about all of that stuff, but you know, seriously, it's going to be nice to be.
But I'm wearing pants, but they're pajama pants, Ken. So, you know, I can only judge you so much.
I got my Thai fisherman pants on right now because this Zoom is like a chest up and I think that's as dressed as I'm going to get for VMworld. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah.
The sessions before just kind of hit what I'm looking forward to. I think there are like 5 different areas that we're looking at. And there's something kind of cool that I'm looking forward to in every one of them, right? We've got app modernization, multi-cloud, intrinsic security, virtual cloud network, and digital workspace around the solution breakouts. And I think those for me are going to be the ones that I'm going to try to catch as much as possible because it really does set the direction for where we're going at VMware.
Well, that's the beauty of having on-demand sessions, right? Because usually I can't tell you how many times I've been to VMworld and be like, oh, I want to go catch Frank Dennerman's session. And then, oh, it's the same time my session is. And so I miss it. And so those types of things, the conflicts where it's on the other side and you're going to miss another session. So that is a beauty of having these on-demand sessions is you don't have to miss any. You can catch them all right away.
Yeah, I agree. And I've looked at the list. I actually published a blog post today that has a top 15 session list. And as I mentioned, in the blog post, by the way, before anyone starts complaining about the fact that they were not listed, like Pete and John, you know, I had to limit it to, I didn't have to limit it, but I wanted to limit it to 15 sessions. And man, there are so many great sessions. I was going through the list. I saw your guys' sessions on vSAN file services, the deep dive, which I think is very interesting. So that's one that I'm looking forward to. But there's also a vSAN technical deep dive by Rakesh and Matt Emner. And Matt is one of the principal engineers in our business unit. Extremely smart guy. So that one is definitely going to be, you know, insane. And then Kit and Per, they've been doing this session called the Data Center of the Future for a couple of years now. And that one also always has a lot of, you know, in-depth information. The one that I think everyone should probably be watching is the one that Nabil and Sazala Reddy are going to do. They'll be discussing the Datrium DR as a service solution a bit more in depth. And, you know, I think that one is going to be interesting. And of course, you know, there are sessions by people like Frank Denneman talking 60 minutes only on NUMA. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you want to melt your brain, that one is definitely one that you probably should be seeing. And there's this whole extreme performance series. I don't know if you guys watched that in the past, those extreme performance series sessions, but man, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That those are so extremely deep. And there's one on every single topic, whether it's, you know, just discussing all of the ESX top metrics or, you know, talking about how to do performance troubleshooting or, you know, measuring performance and what have you. It's just too much. I'm pretty sure that people will be spending weeks just watching the recordings because, you know, we're talking about hundreds of sessions with, you know, a lot of really good content.
Oh, yeah. 500 sessions.
It is crazy. And I mean, Duncan and I, we were chatting about this just before we started recording. And I mean, I was going through my top list too. And then I saw Duncan's post and anything I had would just be redundant at that point because I agree with just about everything that's listed there. The only thing I would also add is the day two scheduled content. Like, you really don't want to miss those, the keynotes, the executive sessions on day one, and that scheduled content on day two. As always, there are going to be some announcements. I don't know which ones are going to land where, but you know, that's where they come out. And I think that can inform what you take from a schedule content perspective. I mean, the schedule content can inform what you take from a on-demand breakout perspective.
Sure.
So there are definitely things to be aware of coming in that scheduled material. It's not just, you know, for the sake of having people with some material. That's where all the announcements go. And really any of those things by day one, day two, I think are the do not misses. And then the things like the extreme performance series and so forth, fascinating topics.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to consume all of this stuff for a long time to come too. So I think just setting up what you want to consume after day one and day two is probably the best way to go.
So I'm going to be selfish in my recommendations and start out with recommending HCI 1825, which I will be doing jointly with Pete here.
Oh yeah.
vSAN file services deep dive. We've got some interesting, I won't say what it is, but we will cover all protocols. And then FCOTR, we're doing that too. I'm also a session, HCI 1276, deconstructing vSAN, a deep dive in the internals of vSAN. Pete and I have been doing this for a couple of years. This actually started as a session I did with Duncan's many years back, into a deep dive of kind of the vSAN IO path and what's going on under the hood. It's kind of a nerdy deep dive. It is 100% fresh content, as it has been every year. And so it's unique in that it's a repeat. We keep doing the same session every year, but we completely rebuild it from the ground up. And so if you like it, go look at the previous iterations of that all the way back to the one Duncan and I did a long time ago.
Nice. I'm actually looking forward to, I know the breakout sessions, the on-demand sessions, they'll be good. I'm really looking forward to the ones where we can actually, the birds of a feather, the expert roundtables, those things, the ones that have limited capacity, you know, because those are going to be ones where we actually can chat with people there. So those are, if you've already registered, if you haven't, be sure to take a look at those, because I'm sure those slots are filling fast. And so those are the ones where if you have very specific questions, if you want to interact with people on certain technologies, they're going to have a bunch of those tables available for every product, every feature. And so you can get, you know, the right person in the room to answer those tough questions. So to me, those are going to be as a presenter, those are always my favorite things, is to interact with the customers and actually whiteboard or talk about a very specific issue with their environment with a certain product. And I think those are the most rewarding experiences for me at VMworld.
Yeah, that stuff is limited limited slots for that though. Just, you know, to want to reiterate your point, don't be disappointed if you can't get into a session with Pete Fletcher, because there might be 25 people that have already stacked up and 250 on the wait list for it. So
yeah, right.
Just be aware, if you want to get into those roundtables, do it as soon as you can.
Good stuff. All right. Yeah, gentlemen, that's good. I think that's a pretty good preview. I'm looking forward to it. This is going to, you know, who knows what this is going to turn out to be. It could be amazing. And I'm hoping it's not really amazing though, because I don't want this to be the future. I do want to go back to Barcelona, and I do want to go back to, you know, at least seeing people in person, because I think that is an aspect of it that I certainly don't want to give up. But I am hoping for a successful event.
Yeah, I think everyone's hoping for a successful event. But to be honest, I personally don't mind not flying for a whole year at this point in time. It's been nice to be at home for a long period of time and not to be stressed constantly, because you need to catch a flight, need to go to a hotel, need to take a taxi, take another taxi, you know, get something quick to eat, present, get off stage, answer 15 questions, take a taxi, go back home. It's a lot of work. So, you know, I like doing things virtual. And if it's up to me, you know, we can do this for another couple of years. You know, one or two events per year, and then that's it.
I will kind of miss, I think, a little bit of all of it, right? Like the in-person in Barcelona, for sure, I'll miss that. Oh, yeah. The in-person in Copenhagen, I'll miss that. The in-person in Las Vegas, it's nice, but it's mostly about the interaction with people. I would rather not deal with people face to face in San Francisco. Just nothing to do with the people. Just, you know, the excrement on the sidewalks, that sort of thing. Like, I won't miss that, the playing that little minefield game. Ah. But yeah, no, I don't know. I like the interaction with people in person for sure. Yeah. But I don't like, I don't know. I have to wonder how much of our audience is being limited by exactly what Duncan's saying. The fact that you have to get onto an airplane,
even
if, within the U.S., if you live in the Southeast and you got to fly out to San Francisco, that's not a trivial thing.
You're right.
So I think we'll probably get more people, more interaction, overall engagement with VMworld by doing it this way. And it will be amazing. It will be very different. I think there will be some things that will come out of the other side and go, wow, okay, I'm not repeating that. Like roundtables with Pete Fletcher, for example, like after people are disappointed.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
We don't want to repeat that performance. So.
Absolutely, Ken. I completely agree. All right, gentlemen. And then I'll close it out with the outro. Good stuff. All right,
guys. What's the outro? What are you going to talk about?
No, I'm just going to say thanks to you guys, and bye for now. You want me to play it live? All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, and so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Ken and Duncan for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. See the head bobs. I like it. This is good. Dance, Ken.
This is why I wanted to hear this. It gets me in a good mood.
You got moves, baby. Wow.
I've got moves. That's it. I got moves.
I love it.
You're the snake. Anyway, gets me all hyped up for the rest of the day. Freaking love this.
Sounds good,
gentlemen.
You know,
the problem is with these... with these podcasts, I always play them at 1.5x speed. So whenever I hear the intro and the outro, just the normal speed, it just drives me nuts. It's not what I expect it to be. It's really
I've
annoying.
Heard that before, actually.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell is this? It's not the same.
Why is it so slow?
Enough of this jibber jabber.